Join me, Christine Weinbrenner-Eirich, for soulful conversations with my community of travelers, exploring the heart, the mind, and the globe. We might all agree that we are missing travel right now. These conversations highlight what tourism really means for the world. Soul of Travel honors the passion and dedication of the people making a positive impact in tourism. In each episode, you'll hear the story of industry professionals and seasoned travelers who know travel is more than a vacation. It is an opportunity for personal awareness, and it is a vehicle for change. We are thought leaders, action takers, and heart-centered change makers. This is the soul of travel. Jess Sotto was a burnt-out corporate yes girl who made the leap to entrepreneurship over 10 years ago. Since then, she has traveled the globe working with the world's most prestigious Fortune 500s to brand new startups, launching their big ideas for the first time. In 2017, using her decades of business knowledge, she co-founded Two Smart Girls, a company committed to helping other high-achieving women jump off the corporate treadmill and design the life and businesses they love. This is a special interview for me with a friend and inspiration with whom I had an instant and deep connection. In our conversation, we share about living our dreams, travel, entrepreneurship, adventure, and how we are working to craft intentional lives for ourselves and inspire others. Join me now for my soulful conversation with Jess Sotto. Good morning. Welcome to Soul of Travel. I'm really happy to be inviting my friend Jess Sotto onto the show this morning. We have been dying to talk about travel for, and I was trying to figure out if it's 2 years or 3 years or anyway, a long enough time to be like waiting for this conversation to happen. And so I'm grateful that it is finally today. And Jess, I'm just going to give you a moment to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what Two Smart Girls is and what you do there, and then we'll go into all of the other fun things.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. Yeah, as you said, 2 or 3 years, I thought, oh, how long has it been? But I think we might be getting close to 3 years now. Well, I'm thrilled to be here, thrilled to be having this conversation with you today. I am the co-founder of Two Smart Girls, and we work with what we lovingly refer to as ex-corporate yes girls, helping them make the leap into entrepreneurship and then building those businesses with confidence and boldness in a way that maybe they wouldn't be able to do on their own. And I do that alongside my partner, Christy Metcalf, and she is in Dallas. I'm here in Colorado Springs. And we've been doing that together now for about 2.5 years.
Yeah, I think we met like just right when this was all unfolding. So it was a bit of new beginnings in every direction for us. And I think that was part of the synergy and just that kismet feel. Yeah. I actually, because I think it ties so well into our story and what other people might listen to and your business, I'm just going to share how we met. And we happened to be at a women's networking event in Denver, and our friend, we had a mutual friend, Rachel, who had been like whispering, you two need to meet each other. You two need to meet each other. And we were at the event and listening to the speaker. And then we had this like speed networking, and I think we still hadn't met each other. And then we just kind of like turned around and we were like, oh, who are you? What do you do? And like 15 minutes later, we're like sobbing and hugging and like connecting over Ethiopia and fair trade jewelry and empowering women and starting businesses and like living really intentional lives. And it was just like, for me, it was a really special moment in terms of just meeting you, but also it was like the first moment I stepped into this space of people who were kind of owning their own lives and creating their careers and really bringing their passion into their everyday lives. And before that, I didn't know it existed. I didn't even know it was an option. So I think that
people who are listening to Soul of Travel, part of it is to be inspired to travel. But what I'm finding is this like underlying theme of so many people who are living their life. And I'm like really referring to this as living on purpose. This is how I feel like it is, like just every day making a choice that puts you on the path to where you want to be. And I think we forget that we don't have those choices. And then one day we wake up and we do. And a fun side note, like this is how much Jess lives on purpose. I haven't been to her house in a while, but she has a rock wall in her living room. So if you want to have a life dedicated to climbing a rock wall, and you're not my only friend who actually has a rock wall in their living room, so that might be something else I need to explore. Like we really can set ourselves up to live in a way that fills us up. So I would love to kind of just start there, because I feel like that's this awakening that sets women on this path. Like we really just look up one day and realize we've said yes one too many times when we really meant no. So I'm going to turn it over, because I'm pretty sure you could probably talk for like 3 hours just on that, but let's dive into that space a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. As a side note, we have a rock wall that we build, and I suspect many new people have them, as many gyms were closed during COVID, the early stages of COVID, and rock climbing is life for a lot of people, especially here in Colorado. But, you know, I think back, you know, a little bit about, you know, my career and the point where I realized, wow, I have just been living on autopilot. And my story a little bit is, you know, I kind of followed the plan, went to a good school, graduated, climbed the corporate ladder, and got to a point about 10 years in where I realized this is not working for me. I remember feeling constantly overwhelmed, and my husband was traveling all the time. We had 2 young kids, both, you know, I think maybe under the age of 5, and no family nearby. And it just, there was no bandwidth for anything. And that was the first time I intentionally walked away from something that I had built in my life. And in all honesty, I would say for probably the next 6 or 7 years, I was living, I was doing, I was successful, but there was not a ton of intentionality. You know, it wasn't until, gosh, it really wasn't until I ended up working in Ethiopia where everything really shifted. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, if I think about, you know, being an entrepreneur, I had been an entrepreneur by the time 2017 rolled around for about 7 years. And I kind of fell into that. And I see that a lot with corporate women, especially the women we work with who have been in or are in service-based roles and, you know, take their expertise from their corporate days and move into entrepreneurship. A lot of times you just kind of get invited back by the company that you left. And in doing that, there's not, I won't say there's no intentionality, but there's an ease to making that transition. And that's exactly what I did. I mean, I literally needed a legal entity. That's what I formed. And that's the work I did for about 7 years. It was good work. I love it. I still love doing corporate leadership training. But it wasn't until 2017, and this is where Christy and I, we had been friends for a lot of years, but this is where our story merges together. We ended up winning a contract to do leadership training in Ethiopia for a major company there. And we had this moment toward the end of our time where we were, you know, asked a question about, you know, what we thought about a certain thing in our contract and the work. And it wasn't until the man that we were talking to said, you know, I just needed to hear you ask for it. I had this realization that I really hadn't been asking for the things that I wanted. I hadn't really been doing things on purpose, with purpose. And that conversation was so profound and so life-changing for both me and Christy, you know, that led us to starting Two Smart Girls, which has been a journey of being completely on purpose. And I say that from a professional perspective, because, you know, to your point about the rock climbing, you know, we moved to Colorado about 4-ish years ago now, and that was on purpose. We wanted to be closer to family. We wanted to be more intentional about that in a way that we hadn't been able to. And so I feel like now I'm at a place in my life where I want to be very intentional about how I spend my time, who I spend my time with, and what the impact of that is, right? I don't want to just be doing things for my own benefit, right? It's very easy to get caught up in that. But for me, I think, you know, living in developing countries at different points in my life, traveling to developing countries, I've realized how important it is to live beyond yourself and to show up in a way that is not just about you and your benefit or even for the benefit of your family, but how can you make an impact on in a bigger way? And that, you know, that for me is, you know, can transcends all aspects of life, from, you know, work to rock climbing. We're very involved with USA Climbing and our, you know, a lot of rock climbing things. My daughter's dance community, you know, other countries, all that. And so, you know, I just think it's very easy to get caught up in a cycle where you really are just kind of doing the things that are required, and not really understanding the impact of those things. And my goal really is, and if 2020 has taught us anything, just how important it is to live on mission and with purpose.
And as you were speaking about that and kind of that pattern that we get into where we are doing the right things and we're checking the boxes that we thought we should be checking, and how that starts to feel. And I think, I know that your business says that you work with burnout corporate yes girls, and like really understanding what that feels like, because I think that's a, you know, an easy way to convey it, or it sounds catchy, but like, it's a real thing. And I know even now, I mean, I get caught up, like all of a sudden a project will come on and then you are like, yes, I'm glad to have this conversation. I'm going to support you here. I'm doing this. And it all feels in alignment with your business. And then all of a sudden you can't breathe and you're exhausted and you cannot move forward in anything. You're just like sitting there with a weight on you and you're like, oh, I did it again. Like, even when you are aware of it, it's like this ever ending battle to just like, you constantly have to be looking like, should this be on my plate, or can I let it go? And what happens if I let it go? And I think that's probably a real struggle for entrepreneurs, for women. We really do want to make sure that we're holding up everything. And I know that's a part of the work that you do, is helping women to make those decisions so they don't land in that spot over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that, you know, so I don't want to say stepped into entrepreneurship multiple times, but I have had different ventures along the way, and, you know, each one comes with its own learning. And I can say probably now more than ever, you know, it's just so easy to get sucked in. And like you said, they could be all in alignment with your brand, with, you know, the service that you're trying to provide. They can be completely on mission. But at the end of the day, if you say yes to one thing, you have to say no to something else, or you are effectively saying no to something else, right? That's so catchy and cliche, but that is the truth, that when you say yes to doing other people's shows or other people's work, or stepping in to fill a gap, right? That means you're saying no to something that you already had on your plate. And I think as entrepreneurs, and I would say even women in general, right? This is a challenge, because I would say most women want to be living a life of purpose. They want to be contributing in a bigger way. And, you know, volunteering, saying yes, that's a very easy way to do that. But at some point you do get to that place where you are drowning because of all the things. And then there's this question of, an insecurity about saying no. Like, what if they don't like me? Or what if I ruin this relationship? And, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about is, you know, it's okay to say no. It's okay to have a go back. And there are ways that you can do that delicately. And then there are some situations where, okay, you've made this commitment, you really do have to see it through, but that means something else has to take, you know, go to the back burner. So, you know, navigating the priorities of your business, but then also how that meshes with your whole life, I think is a really delicate balance that, you know, most of us struggle with, even when we're super intentional about our time and about our schedules. I mean, I looked at my schedule the other day and I thought, what is happening here? Like, why do I have all these things on there? But there, I looked at them, I'm like, oh, I can see why I said yes to this and this and this and this and this. And now I'm like, I don't want to do any of those things, right? So I'm having to figure out, okay, can I make these things work together? Or do I need to have a go back and just a real conversation? And, you know, some of them will probably be a real conversation where I say, you know, I apologize for, you know, committing to this, and can we move this a little bit further into the new year or what have you? So I think, you know, just being real and honest about what you can and cannot do, and then having the conversation that's needed if you've pushed it too far.
I think it's really valuable both ways, where if you set that boundary, you give someone else permission to set that boundary. And if you see it, I remember one time I met someone at an event and I had written their name down as interested in other information and they weren't. And I called them, and, you know, if they would have called me, I would have been like, oh yeah, could you go ahead and send me more? Like, I would have felt bad that they had me on the wrong list or whatever. And she said, oh, that actually wasn't me. I don't need that service at all. And I was just floored. I was like, what just happened? What did she do? That was magic. Like, she didn't want it and said no and was kind and my feelings aren't hurt. And she still like go on the trajectory that she had outlined for herself. And it was really empowering. And it was a real strong example for me of it being okay to do that, and really liberating, actually. Like, I was like, oh, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to say no like that. Like, really, just, it was kind. It wasn't, you know, abrasive. It just wasn't like, she literally just didn't ask for it. And so I think it really helps. Like, it loosens that up for all of us, for you to call someone and say, oh, I overcommitted, and I definitely want to support you. But in February, for them to just receive that. And like, once we all start doing it, it makes it easier.
Well, and I think the same applies with like asking for help too, right? Because when I, you know, this is an ongoing struggle area for me. I'm very independent, fiercely. So I like to be able to do things on my own. I don't want to have to rely on others. And yet I have realized that there's real power, of course, and asking for help, because it's not just help for me, but it does in fact give permission to others to do the same. And let's be honest, nobody's out there doing it on their own. And so, you know, I think, you know, that's certainly true in entrepreneurship, but yeah, I love how you said that. You know, when you ask for help, when you set boundaries, it gives other people permission to do the same, and just reinforces the importance of it for yourself.
I would love to pull two things into this conversation, since this is a space for empowering voices of women. That's definitely what you do. Another reason why, like, we were soul sisters, and travel. So I'm going to kind of pull us back to where you grew up and how that experience has influenced who you are and where you're at this point in your life.
I was actually thinking about this in preparation for our conversation today. And so I grew up in a smaller town in Oklahoma, just outside of Tulsa. And the very first time I ever got on an airplane was to move to Egypt. And we were supposed to, that I was about 10 years old at the time. And we were supposed to be going there just for a year. My dad had, you know, was an engineer. He was being transferred to do some work with the Egyptian Air Force. And we ended up being there for 3.5 years. And I look back on that time, and they were truly some of the most formative times of my life, right? Between the ages of 10 and 14. So basically my middle school years. And I had a pretty non-traditional education route. You know, we started at an Egyptian school, and it really was not a good fit for my brother. And we ended up being homeschooled slash had a private tutor from a lady from England, and who I'm still friends with to this day, which is kind of fun. And, you know, I think about, you know, when I moved from Egypt back to the US to start high school, I had a very clear path in my mind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to do international law. I was already studying French. I spoke Arabic. And my path was very clear before me. And then, of course, you know, high school and college happens. And I ended up studying abroad in Egypt again, because I truly love Middle Eastern culture. And it's, you know, when I think about what that did for me, you know, it changed the way I view the world. It changed, you know, how I look at other people, and not assuming that I'm the center, right? But that I can interact and learn and grow from other people in a way that I don't think I would have gotten as fully, if at all, had I just stayed here. And you know, it wasn't always easy. Living in a developing country is not easy most of the time. But I met some of the most amazing people. And so I, you know, moved back, high school, went to college, studied Arabic, realized I did not want to be an attorney, and ended up switching my major to Arabic language and Middle Eastern, political science, but with a focus on Middle Eastern politics. And I ended up graduating in 2001 and began my first job on September 10th of 2001. So I look at that time period, and all of my experience the second day of my job became very important to helping provide perspective, right? And, you know, people will have to go back and think about what it was like in that moment, you know, the way we talked about the Middle East, the way we talked about Islam, the way we talked about all of these things, right? There was just this very harsh edge that was not totally rooted in reality. And at the time, I worked in a defense manufacturing company. So there was a very high U.S. military presence, and they had their own perspective. And so it was really enlightening, because I learned from their point of view, and then I got to help educate them based on my point of view, because our experiences were completely different. And so that was, you know, I look back at that time and I just think, what a gift to be able to give that experience and to receive from others in that way. And, you know, it's something that we've talked a lot about as a family, as we've traveled. You know, that was the one thing I said to my husband, you know, when we were dating back in the day, and since, that I wanted our kids to travel. I wanted our kids to be able to see the world in a way that I got to see it, and also that he got to see. He grew up in a family that traveled a lot as well. And it was really important for me that our kids would grow up with a perspective that was not necessarily US-centric, to see how other people live that is very, very different than our own. So since then, you know, we've spent a good amount of time in Japan. I spent a huge chunk of time in Ethiopia, and those lessons just keep getting reinforced. And yeah, one of the things that, you know, I was thinking about a situation that happened when I was in Ethiopia. So some people may not know, but Ethiopia is a relatively closed country, and they really celebrate the fact that they're the only African country to never be colonized. And they have really protected the culture, the religion, the whole thing of the country. And it was really important to me when we went, based on my experience in Egypt, what I saw, it was really important to me that when I went to Ethiopia to not be, you know, to make it a collaborative experience. I didn't want to, you know, for lack of a better word, I didn't want to be the white savior stepping into this country. And I had this very interesting experience. So I had been there off and on four different times for about 3 weeks at a time. And we worked with a group of women who were part of the office staff of this academy. And I am an avid tea drinker. I could just drink tea all day. And I was constantly going to the office and they were constantly bringing me tea. And at some point I started to feel really weird about them bringing me tea because I was fully capable of walking down to the office and making it myself. So the final trip that we were there, and I had been pushing back on this issue, like, you don't need to bring me tea. You know, I'm perfectly capable. And at one point at the very end of the trip, so this is four different, I mean, nearly 6 months in, one of the ladies says, because I had kind of fought this, she said, when you don't allow us to bring you tea, you are not allowing us to serve you. And hospitality is a very important part of our culture. And I was so taken aback because I had gone in not wanting to have them be doing things for me out of a place of good intention. And I brought my own racial and cultural baggage from the US, my own filters, and was then doing the exact opposite of what I had intended. And it was such a powerful lesson because I realized that no matter how good your intention, no matter how culturally aware you are, you can still, you know, push the wrong button. You can still be doing things that you don't really understand the consequences for. And, you know, your baggage that you bring, for right or for wrong, is something that you're going to have to do business with. And I, that was like so far off my radar, but I thought about that experience a lot, that, you know, being sensitive to, you know, what people are bringing with them, what their intentions are, and then also understanding the impact of that behavior. So, you know, I feel like some of those are experiences that I don't think I could have gotten had I not stepped outside the walls of the US, so to speak.
I think a lot of times, like, this theme of resiliency and adaptability come up from travel as lessons that you learn because you are, you know, you are bringing yourself in and entering this new situation, and you do have to learn how to, like, tap in and be open and aware and be flexible and adaptable and grow. And then, like you said, even with the best of intentions and the purest of hearts, like, you're still going to mess up. You are, like, the way around it. And so I think that makes travel sometimes intimidating for people. That's one of those barriers. And actually, I hope it's a barrier because we should want to be that conscious that we're not going to do that. And so it's, you know, it's kind of heavy handed on both sides that need to acknowledge that you're going to mess up, and you should want to be aware that you're going to mess up, and just to honor where you are. And the idea that, I think, you know, we often grow up in this, you know, as Americans, we do grow up in this Americentric bubble, like, all of our history is through this filter, all of our experiences are, and it's to no fault. I mean, this is just how we're raised, right? This is how we're growing up. And I think some people become aware of that earlier, and some people aren't aware of it ever. And some people travel, and the first time they just, like, everything crumbles around them. And I think that's why travel is so important, is because you do have this different lens. And while you, you know, might not be aware in every situation, you at least have the ability to know that there's all these other things happening around you. And I love that you like were fast and held fast to like needing to take your kids to travel. I remember having an experience. I was in visiting a slum, the slums in Nairobi, and we were visiting a school. And I mean, what a powerful experience. Like, I couldn't even process all of the things that were happening in that moment, other than just gratitude for the experience. Like, I'm like, okay, I'll have to deal with like thinking how I feel about all these things that I'm witnessing and learning and unlearning. And, but one of my colleagues showed up, from the travel industry, and he had his two kids with him, and they're probably right around the ages that our children are right now. And I just was like, that's the answer. Like, that's what we have to do. And they were singing with the kids that were performing, and they were playing, and they were, you know, riding in the truck with us through the slums. And like, I just, there was no question for them to play together. They didn't have any reservedness. They just were. And then they were just witnessing each other and how they live without that judgment. They don't have as much of the baggage that we are already carrying. And I just thought in that moment, like, if I ever have children, this will definitely be a part of their life. I just kept thinking that that dad was giving their children the best gift that they're ever going to receive, is to know that there is a whole world out there. And even, you know, we didn't have internet, and we didn't, I mean, I only had two stations growing up. Like, I had nothing. Like, really, it was this bubble. So our kids have so much more access to that. And through the nature of how we parent, because that has been our life experiences, they still have a lot more access to that, but there's so much more for them to grow. And so I think all the time, you know, people say, well, what is this? What is this other value of travel besides, you know, release and escape and, you know, a warm beach when it's miserably cold? And it's just, I think it's just so important in how it shapes us and how it really does allow us to become this member of a global community. Like, again, like you were tying that back into, and I didn't know that experience with your first, like, second day on the job, I guess. I can't even imagine. And I remember the first time that I traveled in the Middle East, and I was traveling with very seasoned travelers, and I was kind of the newbie, and I really expected to be one having a lot of growing pains. And I was seeing people being very nervous, and this was probably around 2004. So it was still like, there's still a lot of rawness in that, that, you know, discomfort. And I just expected them to have already like worked through all of that. And they were like, I'm nervous. I don't know what to expect. I don't know how to act. I don't know how I'm going to be received. I don't know how to like put myself out there. And it just was really interesting. And then I had the privilege of having a man guide a small group of us to his mosque. And it really was the most profound experience I've ever had in my life, when he sat to read me the Quran, and like, he asked first if he could have permission to share it with us. And the mosque was just like so unbelievably beautiful, and the people within it and the sound of the prayer, like, I have never felt more spiritually connected to anything in my life beyond that moment. And he began to read, and like, his love and his pride and the peace in his words, like, everything I had ever felt was erased in that moment. And that's the container where I start if anything ever comes up. And so I think that that's where travel like has the most power, is we connect. We just connect. Humans connect. And so the more we connect those dots and bring that into our hearts, like, you know, that's where I think the magic lies.
Yeah. I mean, to me, travel is the great equalizer. it's very easy to have opinions and judgments about other people, culture, religion, you know, whatever. But it's like, I don't want to say it gets erased, but you get, when you're face to face, when you're looking someone in the eye and you see that they're just like you, that they're just another person, that by the virtue of where they grew up, how they grew up, this is their lived experience. This is their, you know, their eccentricity. And I think that, you know, if I think of all the lessons from all the different places I've been in the world, to me, that is probably the most profound, which is when you get face to face, when you are talking to someone else, all the other stuff gets put in perspective in a way that is very difficult otherwise. And, you know, as you were talking about the kids in the slum and how they were playing, it just made me think about, you know, when we were growing up, we lived in Egypt, we lived in this hotel complex. So we had access to all the hotel grounds. And so we were routinely spending time with kids from all over the world. And many times we did not speak the same language. Like, there's this one image in my head of my little sister. She's 5 years younger than me, of her playing in the pool with a little girl from Hungary. The little girl didn't speak English. Obviously my sister didn't speak Hungarian. And yet that was not a problem, right? There's something about the way children show up and connect that I think we can really learn from. And I thought about that experience many times since then. I think about, you know, when my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law live in Japan, and we went to visit them a couple years ago. And I remember us going to a park as a family and my kids just starting to play with like other kids on the playground, right? There's something about the way kids interact and view the world that is so beautiful. And I think you see that same parallel with just travel in general, and being able to erase some of those barriers that we kind of artificially put in place, or because of an experience that someone we know has had, all of a sudden becomes part of your experience. When in reality, when I'm looking at you, when I'm talking to you, when I'm, you know, understanding the deep peace that comes from your religious practice or what have you, all of a sudden everything shifts. And now we're just two people, as opposed to, you know, two people with different religions in different countries with different cultural baggage, et cetera, right? So, you know, for me, that is one of the things that is the most powerful about travel. Just the way we can learn to connect with people in a much, much more realistic way.
It's so powerful. And I've had that moment, and especially with women, because I just think there's something about the way we connect through shared experiences with, you know, families or education, or there's just, it's so easy to like tap into this moment. And sometimes I will look back and I think I had a conversation, but I didn't, right? Like I think, oh yes, we had a conversation like you and I are having, and it wasn't, it was like, you know, this is my baby and I'm in like this hut in the middle of, you know, nowhere in Uganda, and we're not speaking English, and like the laughter about like what they're learning, and I'm, you know, it's just, it's so crazy how it just becomes, like you said, just so same. And of course, like there's many things we're not ever going to understand about, you know, their past life experiences, but in that moment, like we can really see the humanity and the shared humanity. And yeah, like I have really become addicted to that moment. And that's why I created Lotus Sojourns, because I was like, I just want as many people as possible to feel that. Like it's just up there with big magic. Like it's
totally. Yeah. Totally.
I'm like, and we'll begin tears. No. I maintain it through this conversation. Well, I think I love that we got to go through that like uncovering, because I think that is like, that is really the power of travel. And it's that, then when you tie that back into like career and purpose, it's that moment of really being able to understand people and what they need and who they are and why they need it and why we need it in ourselves, then we can really apply that to our lives. And this has been something I've been playing with a lot this year, with obviously like launching a travel company and having my first anniversary on March 10th. It's kind of a little similar, right? And then right. Like, perfect timing for a travel company. And then really thinking about why we travel and what we get out of travel and how we bring that back into our lives and how can we do that in the absence of travel and what can we bring back into our business and to ourselves and to our families. And it can still ripple out even without the act of travel. And so I think that's where what the work we do is so intertwined. Like, it's really this journeying and discovery and then setting those boundaries, being really clear on how we want to show up in the world beyond ourselves. Like, it's just this much bigger picture. So I love the commonality in what we want to bring to women and to the world. And you had shared a quote on LinkedIn, because, you know, following you there as well. And it was from a book that you're reading. And I love that we both also have a book addiction, which I think goes hand in hand with the travel addiction, because it's like when you can't travel, you still have to go somewhere, right? That's right. And so if it's through the pages of every kind of book, that's fine. And I think we both read every kind of book too, which I also love. Like, we're equally happy with like women's business development and Twilight and like gardening and like everywhere. Anyway, so this book you mentioned was The 12 Week Year by Brian Moran, which I haven't read, so I'm happy to put on my list. But the quote was, "Greatness is not achieved when a great result is achieved, but long before that, when the individual makes the choice to do what is necessary to become great." And so I think this kind of ties it all back together. It's like this journey in us, this journey to our career or how we show up in our lives, really begins the moment we choose to walk down that path.
Yeah, it's that, you know, that quote was almost like a gut punch, because I do think we get really caught up in not even the journey, but the destination. It's like, okay, we've arrived. And if you've ever, you know, set a big goal and you've gotten there, you realize that there's a little bit of a letdown, right? There's a moment of elation, but then there's also this moment of letdown, like, oh, I'm already there. And I think that's because when we set big goals, whether it's, you know, to do some massive travel adventure, to start a business, whatever, run a marathon, we've already committed to making that happen. We're already doing the work of getting there. And it's like, oh yeah, I've already done that. Like, it's like we've already done it in our own mind. And so when we get to the destination, it's like a little bit anticlimactic. And so when I was reading that, I just thought, wow, I hadn't thought about it in the term, you know, in terms of greatness, but you know, what is required to be great, right, is a decision and another decision and another decision over and over and over that gets you to the place that you think in your mind is going to be your place of greatness. And, you know, I shared that because I think for, especially for the women in our community who are out there hustling and grinding and really trying to build beautiful things and bring them to life in the world, I think we think, oh, I'll feel this thing when I get there. But really, it's going to come because you've made the choice over and over and over again to do it. And so, yeah, I just think, you know, I was thinking about one of the things Christy and I did when we were in Ethiopia. We wrapped up our final trip and we took a trip to Kenya on a safari. And it was amazing. Everybody should do a safari at some point, hopefully one that is like sustainable and responsible and all of that. And I remember having this moment, like this was a pinnacle celebration moment for us of getting through this big contract, doing the work, making some pretty significant life changes. And I won't say I was let down. It was not like that, but I remember not feeling like the the height that I thought I would feel. That, and I realize now in retrospect that it really was because we had continually chosen. We had continually done what it took to get us there. And it was like, I was already there, done it, check the box. So that's not to say I wasn't living in the moment. I was, but I think you know what I mean when I say, right, when you set those big goals, when you're working toward them actively, when you're making the decisions that are going to help you get there, right? That's the part that is where you have the real growth. That's the part where the greatness comes in.
I was thinking about this from so many angles as well. Like, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure, again, we could just talk about this for the whole hour, but it really hit me in the moment I read it, because I was feeling this, again, tied back to this, what do I do with this travel business? What am I doing? I'm like, I love Soul of Travel. I love these connections. How is this tied back to this? And then I launched another like wing of my business to support the communities that we're not traveling to right now. And I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff. And I'm like, where is the greatness? Like, am I even headed in the right direction? And then I was like, okay, take a step back. Like, looking at like, are all of these pieces how I want to show up? Yes, mm-hmm. It's okay. Yeah. Let's just keep moving forward. Like, this is still here, and enjoy this part. And so I just like had to like take a breath and like walk away. And because it was just a moment where I really felt overwhelmed, and I was like, maybe I just need to stop. You know, I just am in motion and I just need to stop. And I think that was true. I did need to stop. It didn't mean I needed to quit, but I just needed to like breathe, as I'm breathing right now. Like,
yeah. Well, there's real power in that pause, right? I mean, we are constantly doing, and, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, go-getters, high achievers, there is like this bias toward action and almost a feeling of insufficiency when we're not in action. But, you know, I look back at everything that 2020 has taught us. And to me, probably the biggest lesson learned is the power of the pause. It's like you said, it's not like a quit, but a let me pause and take stock and get perspective on where I am, where I've been, and where I'm still trying to go. And then use that pause, that just that moment to breathe. I know you love Brené Brown, and she tells the story of, you know, being at a conference and feeling like she had to say yes to all these things that, you know, but she's an introvert. And she was talking with a lady in the elevator, someone who was also a speaker at this event. And the lady said, or Brené asked her, you know, are you going to this happy hour thing? And she's like, no, I'm going back to my room. And Brené said, oh, I didn't realize that we could do that. And she said, well, yeah, I mean, I'm speaking later. I need to be able to give my best. And I know I can't give my best if I'm basically out there doing all these things. And she used this example of, when I'm speaking, when I'm doing, I'm exhaling. I need to go inhale, because I can't exhale if I don't inhale. And that's really stuck with me, because I have a bias toward action. I like to constantly be in motion, and I do find it difficult to rest well. But when I think about that, I think, I can't be my best self if I'm constantly doing for my family, for the business, for other women, for whatever community activities I'm involved in, if I don't take time for myself. And I know there's a huge movement right now, and rightfully so, with self-care and making sure that we as wives, moms, women, entrepreneurs are resting well, that we're inhaling. But I just don't think the importance of that can be overstated, because, you know, when we're constantly doing, we're depleting, and we have to find a way to refill.
Oh, I love that so much. I feel like painting inhale on the wall of my office.
I know.
Like, wow, that really was powerful. And I actually just finished doing a 200-hour yoga teacher training, because I needed like it was still me in action, right? Because never stopping. But I needed something else that was literally teaching me to slow down and breathe. And we were both talking about being a bit of insomniacs and like, okay, do we just try to go back to sleep? No, we get up and we do like 6 days work before everybody else wakes up. And even I think last weekend, we ended up having a whole day where we weren't like, we didn't have like a baking project or something already that we thought we might be doing. And it was so painful. I was like, should I just sit on the couch? Okay. What should I be doing? I could be doing anything else. Maybe I should go paint a room. Maybe I should go organize my bookshelf. Maybe I should double check or triple check some list because I'm surely something needs to be done. I can't just sit. I'm the worst sitter.
That's what I say when I say I don't rest well. That's exactly what I mean. Like, it's almost like a guilt of, you know, I'm going to sit here and read this book and it's going to take me 3 hours and I'm just going to do it. And the whole time, like people are doing things around me and I'm like, I feel that tension. And I'm like, no, you are going to rest right now. You are going to read this book. Dang it. I totally feel you.
Yeah. It's so funny how hard it can be. I think that's really valuable. Again, this is probably another area where we could sit and hold space for this conversation. Really powerful. I want to still do, this is kind of in honor of Brené, so I'm so glad you brought her up. My rapid fire questions that I decided that I was adding to this season of Soul of Travel, and they are very much more travel inspired than some of the areas we just were, but I know that you're an avid traveler, so this can give anyone listening a little bit of that side of Jess as well. So what is your favorite book or movie that offers you a travel escape or inspires you to adventure?
Oh my God, you're asking me to like choose between my children here. I don't know if I have a book that allows me like from a travel perspective, but you know, if I think about like favorite books that I can read over and over and over, I always go back to the classics. And Jane Eyre is always at the top of the list.
Yeah, I feel like all books are escapes in their own way. So even without travel, what is always in your suitcase?
Hand sanitizer. I take hand sanitizer everywhere.
What is your favorite destination?
Gosh, my heart always takes me back to Egypt. I just love it there so much.
I can't wait to go back again someday myself. Where do you still long to visit?
I really want to go to Greece. I've never been to Greece. And probably second on the list is like the greater Australia area.
What do you eat that immediately connects you to a place you've been?
Well, not long ago, I had a craving for Egyptian food. And there's this dish called kosheri that is basically like home food, like street food. You just buy it on the street. And I've made it multiple times since I've been home. It never tastes the same. I don't know if it's like there's not enough dirt in the air or what, but whenever I eat that, it's like an immediate transport back.
Who is the person that inspired or encouraged you to set out to explore the world?
Probably my dad. I mean, it was his job that took us on our first trip. And when I studied abroad again, it turned out that he was stationed there again, which was just a weird serendipitous kind of thing. And, you know, he was the one who really encouraged me to set up the travel. There was no study abroad program to Egypt when I was in college at this particular university. And so he encouraged me to push to get it established, you know, encouraged me to travel and to, you know, see things differently. I think partly because of the way he grew up and all of that. So probably my dad.
And the last one, if you could take an adventure with one person, fictional or real, alive or past, who would it be?
I have a love affair with Eleanor Roosevelt. So maybe we'll just go with real person, but back in the day.
I really don't want this time to end because it's just been so good and I've missed you so much anyway, but thank you so much. I think the value of this conversation for giving women permission to like take that jump, to like live in alignment, be their truest selves, explore, be mighty, breathe. It's all been so good. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Soul of Travel. I hope you enjoyed the journey. If this sounds like your community, welcome. I'm so happy to connect with you. You can find more about the ways you can be a part of the Soul of Travel and Lotus Sojourn community at www.lotussojourns.com. Here, you can find out more about Soul of Travel and my guests. You can also find the Lotus Sojourns I Guide for Women, as well as my current book, Sojourn, offering an opportunity to explore your heart, mind, and the world through the pages of books specially selected to create a unique journey. You can find me on Facebook at Lotus Sojourns and join our community, the Lotus Sojourns Collective, or follow me on Instagram, either at Lotus Sojourns or Soul of Travel Podcast. Join the Lotus Sojourns mailing list. I look forward to getting to know you and hopefully hear your story.